This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com.
Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of modern crime now comes transcribed to radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as The Saint.
It's perfectly all right, Miss Ames. Oh, please don't go.
I must. The police
are now at the scene of the crime. They'll take care of things. I can see you're in a hurry.
Yes, I am.
All right, driver, step on it.
Yes, sir.
Comfortable, Miss Ames?
I don't know you, do I?
An oversight on my part that can be easily remedied. I'm Simon Templar.
Simon Templar?
Yes.
Oh, you're the Saint, aren't you?
Sometimes I feel as though I had a neon sign on my forehead. I'll confess the fatal appellation.
Well, I think I'd better get out, Mr. Templar. You see,
Saint is not synonymous with boogeyman, Miss Ames, and why not call me Simon? After all, we were both present at the unveiling of the corpse.
If you think you're being funny, Mr. Templar...
There's nothing funny about murder, particularly when as pretty a girl as you is involved.
But I'm not involved.
A question of semantics, Miss Ames. A man gets killed when you're within 5 feet of him and you turn tail and run. If that's not being involved, my dictionary lied to me.
Well, I suppose you're right. It was foolish of me to run, but when I heard those shots and saw him fall, I... How did you know who I was?
Such modesty is becoming, but hardly intelligent, Miss Ames. You're a star. Your show is opening in a week, and your pictures have been plastered all over town.
Oh, of course, I should have known.
Did you know the man who was shot at?
Yes. Yes, I had an appointment with him. His name was Jim Barry.
Oh, the publisher?
Yes.
I know him, or rather knew him. He's been kind enough to publish some scribblings of mine, but what were you going to see him about? Anything special?
No, just a business talk.
A business talk with a publisher? Don't tell me the Barry Kilgore Company is going to publish the story of your life.
No, but Jim's firm was preparing an anthology of the modern theater, and he wanted to include the new play I'm going to be in.
Down, Benny. Down to the floor.
What?
I said down!
What happened?
Somebody doesn't like us, Betty. The driver of that car threw some hot lead our way.
But how? It wasn't...
I don't know. I only saw the glint of a gun out of the corner of my eye. Hey, driver, are you...
Simon, is he dead?
Wait, I'll see. Now, how do you like that? We get shot at and he faints.
I don't blame him. I fear
him. Well, don't. You must be due at the theater for rehearsal about now and... The show must go on, though for the life of me, I've never been able to understand why.
Hey, Joe, bring your sofa more downstairs.
Okay, Larry.
Here's my dressing room, Simon.
Oh.
You go in and wait for me. I'd have you watch the rehearsal from the wings, but Larry Stevens, our stage manager, is superstitious about it.
Okay, Betty, but your sanctified watchdog will be panting on your threshold till you get back.
After what's happened, Simon, I'll be glad to know you're close by. See you later.
Yeah. Oh, well, might as well wait inside.
But really, Vera, I don't know what you mean.
I think you do, Helen. Just remember what I told you about Jim Barry, and you'll be... Simon Templar. What in the world are you doing here?
Well, now that's what I call a quick switch. Vera Pangborn, lady novelist, gets stage struck. Or are you merely getting material for a novel about backstage?
Oh, no. No theater novels for me, Simon. Oh, let me introduce Helen Trask. Helen, this is Simon Templar.
How do you do, Mr. Templar?
As well as might be expected under the circumstances, Miss Trask. I'm not too accustomed to entering one lovely lady's dressing room and finding two others awaiting me.
Well, as a matter of fact, Helen and I were waiting for Jim Barry. We thought he was coming here with Betty.
Jim Barry? Oh, he's your publisher, isn't he, Vera?
Yes, and Helen's, too. Helen's his really latest discovery. She has a new novel coming out.
Well, I'm afraid you're going to be disappointed, ladies. Barry's been unexpectedly detained.
Oh, and I was so anxious to see you.
Oh, why not let me substitute? I'm very good at parlor tricks and small talk. And
your name, Templar?
Yes, it has been for a number of years. I can remember way back when my parents...
What's the big idea of keeping Miss Ames away from rehearsal?
Oh, did I? Who are you? Oh, Stevens, the stage manager.
That's right, and I'm also the guy who doesn't like stage door Johns.
Now, there's something about the way you said that that hurts me deeply. Gee, what's that thing in the cuff of your trousers, Stevens?
In the cuff of my trousers?
Yeah, right here.
Now, look here, Templar. I don't know what this is all about.
Maybe you don't, but you should know a revolver cartridge when you see one.
Revolver cartridge? Is that what this is?
It is. Where's Betty Ames?
Why, in rehearsal, I had them start.
And I presume there's a shooting scene in this play?
Why, yes, toward the end of the first act, but I...
Well, you'll like me even less after this, but I'm stopping that rehearsal.
You can't do that, Templar.
If I don't, you'll have a dead star on your hands.
Betty Ames, are you crazy?
I hope so. I hear them. Where's the closest stage entrance?
Over there, to your left. I hope you know what you're doing.
I'm afraid I do.
They're at the shooting scene now.
Stop it.
Don't you...
Simon, what's the matter?
Apparently nothing, but I'm a little amazed at finding you all right.
But why shouldn't I be, Simon?
Now, there you have me.
Quiet, quiet, everybody. Templar, I've had enough of this nonsense. You've held up the rehearsal by keeping Betty away, and now you've broken up the end of the first act. Either you get out of this theater, or I'll have you thrown out.
You know, Stevens, I must be super sensitive. Why else would I get the idea that you don't like me? No, don't answer. There's something I want to do first. Where's the gun your leading man fired just now, Betty?
It's over there on the floor, just a prop gun with blank cartridges.
Blank cartridges? So that's it. I've always wondered how people shot in plays had so many lives. You mind if I take a look?
What's all the commotion about?
Oh, hello, Mr. Kilgore. We've been having a little trouble with a fellow named Templar, but everything's under control
now.
Well,
it better be. I've got quite an investment in the show, and the way it looks now, it'll flop before they get to the
second
act.
Now, there's nothing for you to get excited about, Mr. Kilgore. I assure you that...
Of course, that's all in the way one looks at it, Stevens. And I suggest that you look at this gun.
I see it, Templar. So what?
So this. I break it open.
Son... Those aren't blank cartridges. They're real.
Real?
But that's impossible.
Perhaps you'd better take a second look.
But why would anyone in this theater substitute real bullets for the blank?
Now, that is a puzzling question, Stevens. Of course, it couldn't possibly be that someone was interested in killing Betty Ames. Now, could it?
Understand how you knew, Simon.
Well, theatrical people may dress somewhat unconventionally, but I thought that Stevens with revolver cartridges in his trouser cuffs was going a bit overboard. Fortunately, your leading man is a sensitive soul. He jumped at least a foot when I shouted at him as he fired.
Oh, if you hadn't startled him.
Yeah, then I doubt that we'd be sitting here in your dressing room.
But why should anyone want to kill me?
The usual motives are money, jealousy, and fear of discovery.
But I'm not rich. And there's no reason for anyone being jealous of me, and I don't know a thing about anyone.
Are you certain of that, Betty?
Of course I am.
You were pretty much in evidence when Jim Barry was killed.
But so were a dozen other people.
Yeah, but perhaps they didn't see what you saw.
I didn't see anything.
At the killing, perhaps. But what about, well, a familiar face in the crowd, for example?
Familiar face? Mm. No. Oh, wait a minute. Yes. Yes, I did see someone.
And the eyes have it, you saw the killer. Who was it?
That's just it. I don't know.
Let me remind you that a familiar face belongs to someone you know or have seen before.
Yes, I know that, Simon, but I just caught a flash of the face, and I was thinking it looked familiar and was starting to identify it in my mind, and then the shots were fired and Jim Barry was killed, and then it was gone.
I don't suppose you got a similar flash among the people in the theater tonight?
No. Might have been any one of them or none of them.
Hardly what I'd call an elucidating statement. Let's put this together. Barry was the publisher for Vera Pangborn and Helen Trask, and both of them were in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Kilgore, who put up the money for the show, was Barry's partner in the publishing business, and he was in the theater. Stevens, the stage manager...
had that cartridge in his cuff.
Yes, he did, didn't he?
So where does that get us, Simon?
Exactly nowhere. Well, as my old grandmother used to say, if at first you don't succeed, try checking up on the corpse. Come on, Betty. Let's go to the morgue.
Gives me the creep, son.
Strangely enough, the morgue never was noted for being the most cheerful place in the world.
Do you think your schemes work?
How optimistic can one man be? But it's worth a try.
Looking for someone, Mr. Templer.
Hello there, Duncan. How are things?
Things? Oh, they're pretty dead around here. Pretty dead.
Same jolly old soul, aren't you?
Oh, I get my kicks, Mr. Templer.
How peachy for you. Feel jolly enough to do me a favor?
Favor?
Yeah. Did you get an advanced case of rigor mortis in here sometime this evening? Fellow by the name of Barry?
Barry?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure did. Gun killing. Neat job, too. You want to see him?
Oh, no.
I bow to the lady, Duncan. But you know, I have a theory that every murdered man dies with exactly $11.63 in his pocket.
You have?
Mm-hmm.
But how could that be, Mr. Templer?
Let's look at his personal effects and see. Hey, Duncan?
Personal effects?
Yeah.
Well, no, I ain't so sure I ought to. No, sir, can't. You know the rules.
Oh, of course. I'm sorry I mentioned it. Yep. But Miss Ames was anxious to see if those opening night tickets to her new show, the ones in your name, that is, could possibly have been lost around here somewhere.
$11.63, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an interesting theory, Mr. Templer. And we can't block the progress of science, can we?
No, indeed.
There you are. Take a look.
Mm-hmm. Wallet, jewelry, a couple of key rings.
There's a couple of $100 in the wallet. Smashes the theory all to Tunkett, don't it?
Is that all there was on him?
Well, see for yourself. I told you that. Oh. Hey, look out.
Hey, grab it, Duncan. He's going to faint.
Yeah, okay, miss. Okay, I got
you. Thank you. I don't know what happened. Suddenly everything turned black.
All right, Betty, don't talk. I'll get you outside. Even an old ghoul like Duncan gets queasy in here sometimes.
No, I don't either. You sure you're okay, miss?
Yes, thank you. I'm all right now. Thanks very much, Mr. Duncan.
Well, you're welcome. And, them opening night tickets in my name you lost?
Oh, you'll find them at the box office in your name, Mr. Duncan.
Well, I'm glad you folks dropped in.
Part of your scheme seemed to work all right, Simon.
Well, I did get hold of Barry's keys, and thanks to the fainting act you staged, and very realistic it was, too. But there was little else of interest there.
Then what goes on now?
Well, I might suggest that we halt right here in front of the office of Barry Kilgore and Company Publishers. Pick out a key that looks as though it fits the lock. Mm-hmm. And walk right in. There, you see what skill, perseverance, and some petty larceny can accomplish? Now, where's Jim Barry's office? Do you know?
Oh, yes. Right over there.
Uh-huh.
Kilgore's the one next to it. There's the light switch on the wall.
You'll never make an understudy to a sneak thief by talking about lights, Betty. My flashlight's enough.
But I still don't understand what you expect to find up here, Simon.
Neither do I, but I'm looking for motives. And what better place to find motives than in the dead man's private files? Mm-hmm. Let's start with this stuff on the desk.
Those are only galley proofs of a book, Simon.
So it would appear. What a fascinating title. My Heart's One Romance by Helen Trask.
Oh, no. Talk about corn. No motive for murder there.
I wonder.
What do you mean?
This inter-office memo clipped to it. Listen to this. For Pete's sake, Jim, stop publishing this kind of tripe before it ruins us. It's initialed K. K for Kilgore.
What do you make of that, Simon?
I think Kilgore didn't like the book.
But if it's as bad as all that, why was Jim Barry publishing it?
Maybe you better take another look at Helen Trask.
Oh, you mean you think that Helen and Jim Barry were...
I prefer to keep an open and clean mind about these things, Betty. But we do know Kilgore didn't like it. And Kilgore stands to get plenty now that Barry's dead. He becomes sole owner of the business.
Simon, Simon, someone's coming to the outer office.
That's very inconsiderate of him.
But what if it's the police or Jim Barry's murderer?
Those suggestions are very inconsiderate of you.
What's he doing now, Simon?
Not he. There are two people in the office.
Are they coming in here?
No, they've gone into Kilgore's office.
Oh.
They didn't turn on the lights, so they must be familiar with the place. Remind me to complain to the owners of this building. They've made these walls so soundproof, I can't even recognize the voices, let alone hear...
Simon!
Yeah, we could hear those all right, couldn't we? I'll be right back.
No, Simon, please!
Oh.
Simon!
Oh, whoever it was got away.
Simon, are you all right? I'll get a doctor. I
better make it a carpenter instead, Betty.
Carpenter?
Yeah, the shot's missed, but I certainly smashed up that desk I ran into. Let's find the lights and see how much damage was done. Does it now?
Simon!
The damage was quite extensive to Mr. Kilgore. Our chief suspect has been crossed off the list by a bullet between his eyes.
Got me home safe and sound, Simon.
After what's gone on today, I'm beginning to wonder how that happened. Does everything look to be in place?
Yes, of course.
Betty, it's a funny thing, but ever since my college prom days, I've had an abiding dislike for chaperones popping up unexpectedly. I'd better look around. Look, don't let these modern inventions frighten you, Betty. The telephone is quite on.
My nerves are... I'll answer it.
Good.
Oh, yes, Vera.
I want you to do me a favor, Betty. I think I know something about Jim Barry's death.
Just a minute, Vera. Simon, it's Vera Pangborn. She says she thinks she knows something about the Barry killing.
Well, don't be piggish about things. Split the receiver with me and let me listen, too.
Vera? What do you mean?
Well, I don't know just how to explain it, Betty, but... Get away from that window!
Vera! What is it?
No! No, go!
Simon, those were shots. What happened there?
This may come as a tremendous surprise, Betty, but it sounds like Vera Pangborn just became murder victim number 3.
Vera doesn't answer, Simon.
Well, if I must use brawn instead of brains... Unaffected, but not neat. Come on, let's go in.
Simon, there she is.
Yeah.
On the floor.
Is
she?
She's luckier than Barry or Kilgore. Shot in the upper part of the arm. You better get some towels, Betty.
I'll be right back, Simon.
Good.
What happened? Simon. Man. On the fire escape, he shot at me.
I'd be indignant about it, too, Vera, but suppose we talk about it later.
Here, huh? Simon. You better let me at it.
Wait up. I'll lift her out of the cabin. There. Now, if you'll make like Florence Nightingale, Betty, I'd like to look at the fire escape.
All right, Simon.
Betty,
poor darling, time for talk later. Let's get you fixed up first. You just relax. Vera, we're here and everything's going to be all right.
Thanks, Betty.
The view from your fire escape is very disappointing, Vera. Only shattered glass out there. Did this homicidal friend of yours shoot through the window?
Yes. I was talking on the phone to Betty. I looked up and saw him. He had a handkerchief over his face and he shot twice.
There you are, Vera. And that'll hold you until we get a doctor.
By the way, Vera, not that I'm curious or anything, but what was it you were going to tell Betty over the phone about Jim Barry's murder?
I can't tell you, Simon.
Well, I'll admit I'm not as pretty as Betty or as feminine.
No, I won't say anything. He's already shot at me once. I won't say anything. He'll kill me.
Vera, take it easy. You don't have to tell us anything. Simon, we better call a doctor. She's in no condition to be bothered now.
Right now, neither am I. Suppose you take care of the medical details and then meet me at Helen's desk.
Helen's?
Yeah.
Is that where you're going now?
No, I'm going to Larry Stevens' place. And if that sounds confusing to you, it's no wonder. I'm a little confused myself.
Yes?
Hello, Stevens. You mind if I step inside?
Templar, what in blazes are you doing here?
I guess you do mind. Oh, well, I have an invitation for you, Stevens, to come calling on Helen Trask with me.
Helen Trask?
Mm-hmm.
Why should I go to her place?
Oh, I thought it would be sweet if we all chewed over a few explanations together.
You'll get no explanations from me. Now get out, Templar.
Okay, Stevens, but if you don't mind, I would like to leave you something first.
Yes, what's that?
This! You know something, Stevens? I think you're coming with me whether you want to or not. All right, now that Betty is here, we have a quorum.
But I don't understand, Mr. Templar. Why are you all here at my apartment?
There's no sense asking him, Helen. He's completely crazy.
Stevens, I think you're prejudiced because your jaw still aches a little, hmm? Miss Trask, when I entered Betty's dressing room tonight, Vera was saying something to you about Jim Barry. What was it?
Why, she was merely warning me against him. Said he had a weakness for young women writers.
Well, in your case, that's understandable. Would you say his weakness could account for a rather poor manuscript being accepted?
If you're insinuating anything, Mr. Temple...
Oh, Helen, of course not. You didn't listen to Vera, did you?
Naturally not. Mr. Barry always acted like a perfect gentleman.
What are you driving at anyway, Templar?
Well, I say I'm a perfectionist, Stevens. I don't like ragged details hanging over, and that snatch of conversation intrigued me. Something else intrigues me, too, that cartridge in the trouser cuff episode.
You really are determined to play Sherlock Holmes, aren't you? Well, if it'll relieve your mind any, on my way to Betty's dressing room, I bumped into a prop table. Box of what I thought were blank cartridges spilled against me and onto the floor.
Did you think that there might have been some loaded cartridges among the blanks and that one of them lodged in your cuff?
That's it exactly. A very simple explanation.
Yeah, it's almost too simple. Did you try to check this theory of yours?
Well, I tried to, but when I got back to the table, the box was gone.
Which, of course, makes it even simpler. Do you mind if I use your phone, Helen?
Phone? Oh, I know. No, not at all.
Thanks.
You calling the police, Simon?
No, Vera Pangman.
Vera Pangman?
That's right. Hello? Oh, yes, doctor. How's Miss Pangman? Oh, that's fine. Give her a message, will you, please? Tell her Simon Templar called and she needn't worry about that killer any longer. That's right. Betty Ames has remembered who it was she saw at the scene of the murder, and that's all the evidence we need.
Simon, what is this all about?
Beautiful here in the park, isn't it?
You know very well that I haven't remembered the face I saw when Jim was killed.
A brilliant moon, soft starlight, a perfect night for romance, and she talks about killing.
Oh, please, Simon, please. What are we doing out here anyway?
To take a cue from you, just killing time. And I think we've killed enough. Let's get going.
Simon, for the last time, will you give me a direct answer? Where are we going?
Oh, didn't I tell you, Betty? Why, I'm merely taking you home.
Here's my door, Simon. I can find my way in alone.
Don't you think the least I can do is to search the apartment for you again?
That won't be necessary, thank you. Good night.
Well, at least allow me to turn the lights on for you.
There, you're satisfied? Now you can see for yourself that there's...
Yes, I can see quite well. Hello, Vera.
Shut that door, Simon, quickly.
I never argue with a lady, Vera, particularly when she's got a gun in her hand.
That's better. I thought that phone call of yours might have been a trap, Simon, but I had to make sure.
Now that you apparently have made sure, Vera?
You and Betty are going to join the others.
Simon!
Tell me why you killed Jim Barry, Vera. Was he your husband?
Pretty smart, aren't you, Simon? That's right. Jim was my husband.
Yes, I thought so. Jealousy was the only motive I could figure for you.
Every young woman who came along and thought she could write turned his head. The Helen Trask. A high school girl could write a better book than she did.
But Jim Barry was going to divorce you and marry her, wasn't he?
Yes. And now Jim's dead. And Kilgore's dead because he suspected me. And you're going to die, too. Right now.
No, you don't. Give me that gun.
No,
she isn't. Are you, Vera?
No. No. Oh, Simon. Oh, Simon, I was so scared.
You know something, Betty? So was I.
Simon. That business of Vera's being shot. Now, how did you know that she'd fake that?
You know, Betty, that's one thing I always dislike about solving a murder. I have to explain things. But if you won't let well enough alone...
No, Simon, I won't.
All right. It was the glass and the fire escape. Now, shall we get back to that moon?
Simon, what about the glass?
Oh, it came from the shattered window. And there was no glass within the room. Therefore, the shot was fired from within, scattering the glass outward. And who was inside the apartment at the time?
Vera.
Mm-hmm. We have achieved a meeting of the mind. Now, if we can carry that a bit further while discussing those lovely, shimmering stars.
But I heard two shots fired over the phone. Did she use the second one to give herself that flesh wound?
If you were afraid someone was closing in, you'd make a last desperate attempt to throw suspicion elsewhere, wouldn't you?
And she was the one who put the real bullets in the gun in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And fired at me in the cab. But, Simon, why me?
Well, I hate to get repetitious, but remember those motives for murder I listed?
Money, jealousy, and fear of discovery.
Yeah, let's latch on to the last one. She was afraid you'd remember that it was her familiar face you saw in the crowd just before Jim Bailey was killed. Satisfied now?
Well, almost. There's just one more little thing.
Look, Betty, if it doesn't concern the moon, I'm not interested.
All right, Simon. Get interested.
You've been listening to another transcribed adventure of The Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. Now here's our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, as good citizens, we have the entire sphere of American life in which to use our heritage. So let's make the affairs of our nation, state, and community our affairs. Remember that we all have a voice in them. Use that voice, and use it well and often. Only then can we set an example of freedom, knowing that our own American heritage is secure. This is Vincent Price inviting you to join us again next week at this same time for another exciting adventure of The Saint. Good night.
By Sidney Marshall. Our cast included Francis Cheney, Barbara Eiler, Eleanor Audley, Frank Gerstle, Stanley Farrar, and Arthur Q. Bryan. Music was composed and conducted by Von Dexter. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris, is a James L. Fafier production and is directed by Helen Mack. Vincent Price is soon to be seen co-starring in RKO's production of His Kind of Woman. All you Saint fans will be glad to know that the Saint comic books are on sale at all newsstands. Your announcer is Don Stanley. Program, get your program, dear. Following now on NBC are two stellar programs you'll want to stay tuned for. Listen next for another exciting adventure mystery on the adventures of Sam Spade. Then hear the NBC Symphony's summer concert with guest artists Helen Traubel and Vladimir Goldschmidt. And congratulations to station WWJ Detroit on this, their 30th anniversary of broadcasting. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Joel McRae in Tales of the Texas Rangers. Tonight, transcribed from Hollywood, another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson. Texas, more than 260,000 square miles. And 50 men who make up the most famous and oldest law enforcement body in North America. From the files of the Texas Rangers come these stories based on fact. Only names, dates, and places are fictitious for obvious reasons. The events themselves are a matter of record. Case for tonight, Deadhead Freight.
It is shortly before midnight, August 27, 1938, at the Santa Fe Freight Yards in Lubbock, Texas. A Deadhead Freight hauling empties back to the West Coast from Galveston has just pulled into the yard. The brakeman and a railroad detective are making a routine check of the cars for free-riding hobos.
If I was a yard dick, I'd be snoozing in the roundhouse. You ain't found a free rider in months.
Yeah, so what? I get paid to check and I check.
Oh, you know, Bozon, the freights always hop off before we pull into the yards.
You ever think one of them might fall asleep in the car and not have anybody to wake him up?
Well, could be.
Yeah, flash your light and listen.
Okay. Hey, see? Nobody. Mm. Now, the car up ahead is the last of the boxcars. I walked the flats and gondolas while we was rolling, so I know that they're clear.
Hey, why's the door rolled shut on this one?
Well, I don't know now. It shouldn't be.
Now let's get her open. And throw your light around.
Yeah.
Nobody riding, huh? Come on. All right, Bo. On your feet. And throw that light right on him.
Yeah. Well, no wonder it didn't move, just an old duffel bag.
Yeah. What's a duffel bag doing on a deadhead freight? Ain't there something in it, huh? Hey, come here. Feel this.
Why, feels like a body.
Hey, you got a knife on you?
Yeah, here.
That's a good thing we didn't pass this car. The top of the bag sewed up tight. I'll have to cut right through the side.
What? It's a young woman.
Yeah, stabbed to death. And throw that light around the car.
Well, what are you looking for?
There's no blood anyplace. She wasn't killed on the train.
Somebody must have loaded the body on to get rid of it.
Yeah, so the murder can't be pinned down to any definite area. Hey, where'd you stop last, before you pulled in here?
Poseidon, west of Sweetwater.
The body must have been put on someplace between there and Galveston, then. We better call the police. They can notify the Texas Rangers.
After a brief but penetrating study of the situation, Ranger Captain Stinson had the body removed to a Lubbock funeral parlor. He then requested Texas Ranger Jace Pearson to take over the case.
Well, there it is, Jace. Pretty brutal job of stabbing.
You figure it happened a good piece from here, huh?
Couple of reasons for that. Here's a map. Shows the route the freight train took. Spot circled in red shows where it made stops. And at what time.
I see. No stops after it left the siding outside Sweetwater, huh?
Right. And most of the stops were made much further east.
Hmm. Well, according to the time of these stops, body must have been loaded on the train between Presby here and Turner City here.
Well, how do you arrive at that?
Train made all its night stops between these points. Isn't likely the killer loaded the body on by daylight. Too much chance of being spotted by the train crew.
Yeah, that's good reasoning, Jace. You may be right.
You said the body was sewed up in a duffel bag.
Yeah. You better look at it before I send it on to the lab. I have the undertaker lock it in this cabinet and give me the key. Yeah, here it is. Regular opening at the top of the bag is sewed up tight. The draw cord is missing. See?
Uh-huh. Good thing the man who found the body cut into the bag instead of ripping out those new stitches.
Yeah. I see what you mean. Kind of funny stitching.
It may have been made by somebody with a special trade where that kind of stitching's used. Lab gets a look at it, may be able to tell us what trade.
Well, I hope so. The bag itself won't help much, I'm afraid.
Probably picked up in war surplus. Could belong to anybody. Hey, look at this, the bottom of the bag.
It's kind of soiled. Whoever carted it around with a body in it must have set it on the ground to rest.
He sure did, on reddish brown earth. Blood seepage made some of it stick. Let's have a look at that train map again. I think that earth stain kind of narrows down our search, Captain.
Oh? How come?
I know the country that train passed at night. I've been over it plenty. Only place I've seen earth that color is right around this area in a few stream beds. Cotton Belt runs parallel to the railroad for about 40 miles through there. Well, I've seen all I want to see, unless you have something else.
Nope. Let's go. I'll get this bag off to Austin.
Body going to be held here for identification?
Yeah. If she isn't identified, we'll see if we can run down something by her clothes.
Any laundry marks or anything on them?
Afraid not, Jace. Homemade and home laundered. No dental work to help us either. And her fingerprints aren't on the file.
Might have a man check on the shoes she was wearing. They weren't homemade.
Yeah, we'll try it. You got any ideas about what you're going to do?
If it's all right with you, I'd like to take a crack at that Cotton Belt area. tow charcoal down on the horse trailer and then ride parallel to the railroad tracks and see what I can find.
Well, that's a lot of territory. How about Steve Clark riding with you?
Good deal.
We get anything from the lab, I'll let you know. I'll radio Clark and assign him, and you can pick him up on the way. Good luck, Jace.
Thanks, Captain. You'll hear from me. I met Clark. We drove down to the beginning of the area I wanted to check, left the car and used our horses for the long ride along the rail bed. By noon of the next day, we'd covered 15 miles.
Horses are getting tired, Jace.
I know. But there's a siding a little ways ahead. Freight stopped there.
Yeah. Look, another culvert coming up.
Yeah. Bank's pretty steep. Watch your horse.
Right. Careful, boy.
Easy, Charcoal.
Careful.
Easy.
Steep climb out of here, Jace. Maybe if we ride... Hey, what are you looking at? Oh, the ground, huh?
Yeah. Same reddish-brown color we've been checking for.
Well, don't see anything else, though. Want to ride through it a ways?
Yeah. Come on, Charcoal.
Oh, boy. I don't want to be a killjoy, Jace, but we've done this in a dozen creek beds.
Yeah, but none of the others were as close to a train stop. Siding's only about 50 yards further up the... Ooh, ooh, Charcoal.
Ooh, boy, ooh. Find something, Jace?
Yeah. Come here.
Now, what is it? Yeah, marks in the sand.
Trace of a couple of footprints, not enough to make a cast. But look at this other mark. A round impression.
Yeah. What made it?
Might have been somebody setting that duffel bag down.
Yeah? Well, that would account for the dirt you found on the bag.
We'll find out. Get a glass jar from your saddle pack, will
okay.
You?
Gonna cut a core around that mark?
Yeah. Lab can test it for blood trace. Earth this color, we can't tell anything by sight.
Well, here's the jar.
Thanks.
A few empty cans around here, Jace. Those marks might have been made by a hobo.
I don't think so. Dindle stiffs travel light. They don't carry duffel bags. What's the nearest town to here?
Bullville, about a mile further on.
Well, let's get there. We can phone for a highway patrol car, and they can drive you back and pick up our car.
Right. You going to check around Bullville?
With a fine-tooth comb. The cotton crop around Bullville was good. Too good. Migratory pickers were jamming the town. I had photos of the dead girl and tried to find somebody who might have seen her.
No, no, Ranger. Never saw her around the gin here. Town's full up, though. It's possible one of the pickers saw her someplace.
You know anybody who comes in contact with a lot of the pickers?
No, no. Afraid you have to tackle them crew by crew.
That's what I was trying to avoid.
Yeah. Must be a couple of thousand migratories around.
You mind if I ask your man at the weighing platform to check with the haulers when they bring cotton in for ginning?
No, it's all right with me.
Thanks.
Ranger, yeah. Hold it a second. Just happened to think. There is somebody who gets to see a lot of the pickers.
Who?
A Mexican woman. Name's Old Rosie. Drives a junky old truck around peddling soda pop in the fields.
You know where I can locate her?
Yeah, haulers give you a lift out to the fields. And somebody will steer you out to her. Everybody knows Old Rosie.
Somebody killed that poor girl, huh?
That's right, Rosie. You ever see her?
You find who killed her, you going to put him in a jail?
That's my job. How about it? You ever seen her around here?
See, one time.
Where?
At the bus station in the town. She was with a man.
You know who the man was?
No, senor.
And why'd you hesitate? Is that the truth?
Why should I tell a lie, senor? I don't know who the man was.
She described a man, a vague, stumbling description that might fit anybody. And while she described him, I had a feeling she was lying. A feeling that was strengthened by a faint odor of whiskey coming from the truck. Whatever business Rosie was in, it wasn't limited to the sale of soft drinks. I pretended to swallow her story, then I got a lift back to town where Steve Clark was waiting with our car.
Better hop in, Jace. Just had a call from Austin.
Yeah, they checked the earth samples sent in a jar?
Yeah, blood trace all right. Same type as the victim's. They got a line on a few other things, too. The shoes on the dead girl have been traced through the manufacturer to a store in Sheffield. Yeah, I wrote down the name of the store and the address.
Better get over there and see if we can establish identity.
Yeah, shoes will be waiting at the Sheffield airport. Isn't likely that a shoe clerk is going to remember who he sold them to, though.
I saw the shoes. They've been repaired recently. Whoever fixed them might remember.
Well, that's a chance.
Any information on that duffel bag?
Yeah. Lab ties it in with a seaman.
How?
Stitches used to sew up the bag are the kind seaman used to mend a torn sail. Chase, you look like that throws you.
It does, a little. I was beginning to have a sneaking suspicion about an old Mexican woman. But she's no seaman.
What made you suspect her?
She said she saw the dead girl with a man. But she gave me kind of a phony description. Not only that, but she's supposed to be selling soft drinks to the field hands from an old truck. It reeked of liquor.
Oh, bootlegging, huh? Hey, that could mean something.
What?
A report from Austin mentioned liquor stains on that duffel bag. Naturally, they just figured that a bottle had been broken in the bag at one time or another, but...
Yeah, but it could be something else, too.
Yeah?
That bag might have been used for hauling moonshine. Stop the car.
Hey, Jace, what's the matter?
Slide out. I'm going to Sheffield alone. You stay here.
Okay, Jace. What do you want me to work on?
Tail old Rosie, the Mexican woman, while I'm gone. Check on any special contacts she makes. Whoever she sees, find out who they are. See if you can run down any who've worked as seamen. I burned up the road to Sheffield. The clerk who'd sold the shoes couldn't help, but I got the information I was after in a repair shop.
My sure, I fix it is, all right. Look, here's where I sold the broken strap, you see? I remember because of something else, too. I never get paid for the job.
Whose shoes are they?
Mrs. Watson. She's living two blocks up at Brownwood House.
Mrs. Watson, huh? Is her husband around?
No. He's a go away month ago. That's why she got no money for pay for the shoes. I know you bother her. She lived with her mother and a little baby. He's a 1-year-old.
Any idea where her husband went?
Oh, no. Sometimes she says to go away for work or someplace with the cotton. Sometimes to Galveston to work for the boats.
Oh, you've been a sailor, huh?
Sailor, everything. Whatever he is he no send the money. Last week she come in. She says she's going to meet him and she's going to pay me when she's come back. But she's not come back. Hey, just a minute. Why are you asking me all these things, eh? And how come you got the shoes?
Because Mrs. Watson doesn't need them anymore. She's dead.
You are listening to Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson. We continue now with tonight's case, Deadhead Freight, an authentic story from the files of the Texas Rangers.
It wasn't the kind of news you enjoy breaking to a dead girl's mother and the girl's baby crying in the next room with help at any.
You see, they'd split up about a month ago. And then last week, her husband wrote to her from Bowlville. He said he was sorry and he wanted my daughter Helen to come to meet him. I thought she was there with him.
Looks like she was for a while.
Oh, he promised Helen everything in the letter. Said he had a lot of money for her and their baby. He was never any good. And now the baby's left to me and I'm just too old.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Can you give me your son-in-law's full name and his description?
Herbert Watson is his name. They call him Bud.
Herbert Bud Watson. About how tall would you say he was? You better pull yourself together, ma'am. Somebody's at the door.
I'll call out the window and send him away. I don't want to see anybody now.
What is it, ma'am? What's the matter?
Oh, it's somebody. Open the door.
It's him. My son-in-law, Bud.
All right, ma'am. Open the door and let him in. Go ahead.
Well, what took you so long? Where's Helen?
You know where she is. What did you do to her? What did you do to my girl?
Are you crazy? What's the matter?
Let him go, ma'am, and stand back.
What? Ranger, what?
Get your hands up and turn around.
You killed her. And you got the gall to come here with your own baby crying.
Ranger, what is this? Kill who? Helen. Where's Helen? Where is she?
Don't you know, Watson? Or did you think she'd never be identified?
Helen's been murdered? Oh, no. No.
You did it. You
did it. No, Mom. No, I gave her money. Told her to come back home and I'd meet her here today. Who's going to take the kid and make a fresh start?
How much money did you give your wife?
$1,000.
That's a lot. Where'd you get it? Come on.
I was bootlegging to the pickers.
How long you been getting away with that?
Started it last season.
Did old Rosie sell any of this stuff for you?
How did you know about that?
I didn't for sure until now. Come on. We're going back to your place of business in Bowlville.
Hi, Jace.
Steve. Yeah, I got your message to meet you here. Rosie's over there. Want to get her off the truck?
Yeah, she can talk from there. Come on. You too, Watson.
Okay.
Bud Watson murdered Daryl's husband. Been bootlegging here. Rosie's been moving some of the stuff for him.
Oh?
Why you keep me from my work, senor?
Your work isn't as legal as it could be, Rosie, so sit tight. Yeah, you ever seen this man before?
You know she's seen me before.
They didn't ask you. How about it, Rosie?
Si.
All right, Rosie. Now, is he the same man you saw at the bus depot with the girl whose picture I showed you?
Si. Huh? He's the man.
At the bus depot? But that ain't so. I was never with Helen at the bus depot.
You didn't meet her when she came down here?
No, I tell you. I didn't know what bus she was coming in on. Or even if she would come after she got my letter. First I saw her, she turned up here at the shack.
Well, how about when she left to go home?
She only stayed 2-3 hours all told. Let her go back to the bus depot alone because, well, it was getting dark. Near time for the pickers to be coming there to buy drinks.
You hear that, Rosie? Yeah. That means one of you is lying.
Rosie, tell the truth, senor.
You don't always tell the truth, Rosie. The first time I asked you about the man you saw, you said he was a stranger, a man you'd never seen before.
I forget, senor. I see a lot of people every day in the fields.
You trying to kid me? You've been selling liquor for this man. You couldn't mistake him for a stranger.
But I do, senor. I make mistake. You wanted help, I give you help. Rosie tell you all she knows, that's all.
It was obvious that Rosie was lying, just as I'd suspected her of lying the first time. There had to be a reason for it. We took Bud Watson into Bowlville jail and then went back to search his shack.
I can't figure something, Jace. Why won't Watson admit it if he was at the bus station with his wife? That wouldn't hurt him.
No, it wouldn't. That's why I think he's telling the truth.
Well, Rosie must be covering up for something.
Covering up for somebody's a better guess.
She might have done it herself.
No, I don't think so. She's too old to cart a body across the country to the railroad.
Well, then you figure she really did see Mrs. Watson at the bus depot with a man, huh?
Yeah. The man who killed her to get the $1,000 Bud Watson had given her.
Well, then what's Rosie's angle in lying to us?
Well, that's an easy one, Steve. Shakedown.
Hey, Jace, you're right. Couldn't be anything else. Why, it'd be worth the cut for her to forget seeing the man and say it was Watson instead. Only one thing wrong with it.
What?
Well, I watched her while you were gone. She didn't make any suspicious contacts, nothing that could have been a payoff.
She might have gotten her payoff right after I showed her the Watson girl's picture and told her she'd been murdered. That was before you started to tail her.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. She had time. Well, we combed this shack, Jace. Nothing here. What do we do now?
Go back to Taylor and Rosie again. If she squeezed hush money out of the man once, she's liable to try it again. They all do. We'll start by watching her house when she comes in from the fields tonight. We staked out near Rosie's adobe hut, but it got dark and she didn't come in from the fields. I left Steve on watch and went out to look for her, keeping an eye out for her old truck. I found it about 5 miles out, surrounded by a group of men carrying torches. Hey, what's going on here?
Oh, Ranger! Rosie! You better come!
Yeah, what happened?
We was walking into town. We saw the truck here by the side of the road, thought maybe it broke down, so we started to call for old Rosie. Then one of the boys spotted the blood on the ground.
What blood?
I'll show you over here. Must be old Rosie's, I reckon, because we found her over here in the cotton row. She's dead, Ranger. Somebody cut her throat from ear to ear.
Old Rosie had tried to shake down a killer once too often with the usual payoff. I sent a rushed call to Steve Clark to tow his horse out and join me. We followed the trail which led to a deserted picker shack way off in a field that looked like it hadn't been cultivated for years. The shack had been occupied, though. Recently occupied. But whoever had been there was gone. There's a lamp there, Steve. Light it.
Yeah. It's clean as a whistle, Jay.
Yeah, it's too clean. That floor's been scrubbed mighty hard for a shack like this.
It sure has. Especially for a place nobody's living in. Must have been cleaning up blood.
Yeah. And there are two other things.
What's that?
Whoever was hiding here was mighty handy with a knife. Look at the inside of the door. Circle drawn on the wood. Wood chipped where somebody practiced throwing a knife at it.
Yeah, good aim. All the marks right smack inside the circle. Now, what else?
Take a look at the lamp you just lit. The cord it's hanging by.
It's just an ordinary hunk of rope.
Except for the knot holding the lamp. A running bowline. So the light could be raised or lowered toward the table.
A running bowline is a seaman's knot.
Yeah, and that cord is just about big enough to be the draw cord from a duffel bag. Our seaman was here, all right.
Well, it couldn't have been Watson, Jace. He was safe in jail when Rosie was killed.
Yeah. Whoever Rosie saw with Mrs. Watson at the bus depot must have met the girl after she left Watson, after she had the money.
Yeah?
Married woman on her way home to her baby isn't liable to leave a bus depot with a stranger, is she? Chances are it was somebody she knew.
Well, Watson's been a sailor. Think it might have been an old shipmate of his?
Let's go see if he remembers one who was handy with a knife.
You say somebody killed old Rosie?
Yeah. The same man who killed your wife. Now think and think hard. Yeah. The killer was a seaman. We got reason to think it could be an old shipmate of yours who knew your wife.
Oh, but Helen knew shipmates of mine all along the Gulf. I introduced her to lots of them.
The one we want had a habit of throwing a knife.
Yeah, he drew targets on a door. Never missed.
Matt Corbett. It was Matt Corbett!
How do you know? Any reason for him to be around here?
Yeah. He was my partner last year. Bootlegging here. Business got bad and he left. I wrote to him months ago asking him to come back for this picking, but he never answered me.
Did Rosie know him?
Sure she did. From last year.
That's it, Clark. Rosie'd seen Corbett with Mrs. Watson. That's why he couldn't run with the money after he'd killed her. He had to wait to see if the body was found and identified.
And when we moved in and she knew about the murder, she really had him pinned down.
And he used to be my best friend. A sneak.
Never mind that now. Where would he run to?
I don't know. He was always roaming, like me.
Hey, you wrote to him someplace, you said. You must have an address.
Yeah. Yeah, it was General Delivery at Port O'Connor. There's an old bait shack there. He lived in it whenever he had enough money to stop moving for a while.
He's got enough now. What he got from your wife. Come on, Clark. Let's get him. We headed for Port O'Connor, made it by morning, and found the abandoned bait shack.
Nobody inside, Jace, can see through the window. He isn't here.
Yeah, he's probably traveling by freight to avoid being spotted. He couldn't have beaten us here. We rolled too fast.
Gonna stake it out and wait?
Yeah. Our car's out of sight where we left it. He won't spot it coming along the wharf. Come on, let's go inside.
Yeah, looked like Matt Corbett's the man we're after, all right. Same trademarks here we found on that picker shack at Bullville.
Yeah. Knife marks in a circle on the door. Same running bowline holding the lamp. Draw that burlap sack across the window.
That'll make it pretty dark in here, Jace.
You want it dark when you're throwing a surprise party. Hey, Steve. Steve, wake up.
What?
Shh. Somebody coming along the wharf.
It's dark. What time is it?
A little after midnight.
Steps are coming closer.
Yeah, it must be Corbett. Nothing to bring anybody else this way at this time of night.
He's heading for here, all right.
Yeah. Let him get all the way inside. And remember, he's got that knife, and he's handy with it.
I know.
All right, Corbett. Never mind that lamp.
Watch the knife, Dave.
Stand still on the light, Steve.
Handle him. Or stop your struggling, Corbett.
You're stinking. My arm. Ah. You broke my arm. All right.
Just wrench your shoulder, Corbett.
Keep you from throwing that knife for a while. Come on, get up. Better light the lamp now, Steve.
It's a good thing you jumped him, Jace. I felt that knife pass in my ear. Look, buried in that wall a good inch.
Hey, Rangers. I thought you were a couple of crooks.
What's she doing here?
Just dropped in to arrest you for the murder of Helen Watson and old Rosie up at Bowlville.
It'd be nice if you could prove it. I haven't been near Bowlville.
I think we can prove you were. My marks you left on the door and a few other things. How'd you come back, freight?
Are you kidding?
No, I'm serious. You should have rode Pullman. Get your shoes shined on a Pullman. Would have taken that reddish-brown earth off your shoes. Our lab can match that with Bowlville. Watch out for that shoulder.
Yeah, that's better, Corbett. Want to cuff him, Jace?
No. I think he'll come quiet. All right, Corbett. Let's move.
Herbert Bud Watson served the required term for his bootlegging activities, and Matt Corbett was tried and convicted of murder. The sentence of the court was carried out on February 20th, 1939, when at Huntsville Penitentiary, Matt Corbett died in the electric chair.
And now, here again is the star of our show, Joel McRae, with another interesting story about the Texas Rangers.
In the early days of Texas, major disturbances were not infrequent. It was a lusty, brawling, growing territory, and as happens in such a territory, there were days when the streets were not safe for the good citizens. An Easterner, happening into a Texas town at such a time, found shelter in the house of a minister. Everything will be all right soon, he was assured. Later that same afternoon, the minister, who'd been looking out the window, said, "Well, friend, the streets are safe now. You may go about your business." The Easterner looked out the window, but all he saw was a lone figure riding casually down the main street on a horse. "What makes you think it's safe for me out there now?" he asked in bewilderment. The minister pointed to the horseman. "Because that feller on the horse is a Texas Ranger," he said. "Only folks that aren't safe in this town now are the ones who started the trouble. And when he finds them, they'll wish they'd been peaceable. Good night, folks. See you next week."
Next week, Joel McRae in another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Joel McRae is currently seen starring in the MGM production Stars in My Crown. Tonight's cast included Tony Barrett, Herb Ellis, Tom Holland, Byron Kane, Tom McKee, and Lillian Baier. This story was transcribed and adapted by Joel Murcott, and the program was produced and directed by Stacy Keats. Al Gibney speaking.
Three chimes mean good times on NBC.